Cast your mind back to 1 year ago. There we were, gloomy and despondent, huddled around a single meager woodcutter. It ain't everybody that does a Ferdy Main impression. It is. It really is.
Welcome to Elitist Bastards Go to the Movies, featuring Justin Souther and Ken Hankey, movie reviewers for the Mountain Express. I'm your producer coherer, Steve Schoenfeld. And without further ado, here are the boys.
Do you see where we're, say where were you at?
No, I didn't.
Where we are at.
Where you at, you?
Where you at? Where we at?
He's doing this.
Oh, that's right.
He's doing
it. I don't think he knows where he is.
Straight.
I don't think he knows where he is.
He gets on to us if we don't say it.
I know, but I don't think he knows where he is, so he can't say it.
So what did you guys see this week?
Some shit.
All right, it wasn't very good, that's true, for the most part.
Right.
I saw two good movies.
I forgot what I had watched. I had to sit here and think about it.
You saw A Frickin' Cats.
Mm-hmm.
And something else that I keep forgetting.
Water for Elephants.
That was it. So, since it's probably the least interesting thing of the lot, why don't you get A Frickin' Cats out of the way?
I watched African Cats.
You did.
It was about African cats.
House cats?
No, African ones. Outdoor cats.
I'm sure there are house cats in Africa. I'm sure there are outdoor house cats in Africa.
They were feral.
You're talking about like big kitty cats. Big.
Yes.
Eat you for breakfast yes. Cats. Okay.
Specifically, cheetahs and lions.
Oh my.
And boy was it stupid.
They're cats. What did you expect, Trix?
Well, this is the third one of those Disney
Earth Day.
It's easily the worst one of the lot. It's the cheesiest and the hokiest one.
Do you know that I have managed not to see any of these? Of course you do, because that means you have.
I know.
Oh, okay.
Appreciate that.
And I knew you
would.
Well,
The Oceans one was kind of neat. But okay. It was made by frogs, so it's a bit more artistic.
By that you mean Frenchmen?
Yes.
Okay.
It was a bit more. That one's actually neat looking. This one's just like guys hiding in the bushes, peeping toms on these cats.
Guys
like,
hiding in the bushes. This sounds more interesting than what I think this is.
It's not.
That's what I was afraid of.
And then you have Samuel L. Jackson narrating. It's the most embarrassing thing he's done. The most embarrassing he's been. Even that thing with Eugene Levy. I never saw that. You did, though. That was before I was around, though, so I probably would have watched it.
The thing with Eugene Levy.
It was like,
it's starting to come back to me, and I wish it wouldn't. Let's move on.
It's a stupid nature documentary about cats.
Big
it's
cats.
One of those things where they give all the cats personalities and names, and little kids can giggle at it, and it was boring.
It's kind of like Meerkat Manor with large lions.
I've never watched Meerkat Manor.
Well,
maybe you should watch the next one. Actually, I think you should watch the next one. You know why?
Why?
Chimpanzees.
Oh, simian value. We'll see.
So,
is there a premise to the film at all, other than here's some cats?
It's lions and tigers and
it's cats with a story. I don't remember the story. There's other lions coming, and then these baby cheetahs are growing up. Well, one's a heroin addict. This movie opens.
Yeah.
He's giving a hippopotamus a blowjob.
I see.
For some smack.
Are there some like teenage lions trying to put on a musical show in an abandoned ice factory?
Yes,
I thought so.
There's also a robot giraffe. Cyborg from the future.
I like it.
Let's keep talking about this movie.
Let's
much more
go right on. I'm good. Well, let's see. What can we say about the new Jane Eyre, which is, by my count, approximately the 22nd film and or television version of this dating back to 1910. Two besides this one. the 1910 pictures are generally really rushed adaptations, like 11, 12 minutes long. So, you know, those are probably fairly negligible. Anyway, it's fine. It's well made. It's entertaining. It really has a nice gothic atmosphere to it. It has a, it makes the very clever and very immediately involve you in the story move of starting with Jane Eyre running through the moors after the big revelation that should actually occur somewhere around the penultimate reel. And then it goes back, and which I, but it does, that does work. The problem I have with it is it's Jane Eyre. I know exactly where it's going to go, even if you put it out of sequence. I know exactly what it's about. I know what's going to happen.
What is it about, Ken? Because Steve's going to ask you.
It's about 2 hours long.
Okay.
Okay. What is Jane Eyre about? Do you really want to know what Jane Eyre is about?
I didn't ask you.
Are you gonna?
Going to?
No, I would never do that to
Okay,
you.
Well, in which case, I won't tell anybody what it's about. The biggest problem, though, beyond that...
If you do, you, well, I mean...
Okay, well, here's the thing, though. If you've never seen an adaptation, if you have never read the book, if you know nothing about this, as my companion did not, you're probably going to be more impressed with it than I was. However, to me, it has this one really, really blatant problem. I mean, you've got this great mystery of what's going on in this gloomy house. And when we get to the revelation, it's not all that good. I mean, you know, and this, I knew what it was. I knew what the source of all the weird noises and strange attacks and all that stuff was. I knew what it was all coming from. And I've seen it handled in such a way that it was really maybe not surprising, but at least kind of horrific. This is like neither surprising nor horrific, and it really doesn't help the movie, and it didn't help my enjoyment of it. It's probably the best acted of the films I've seen of it. It's probably the closest to the book. But I'll never need to see it again. Mia Wasikowska is an extremely good person to play Jane, but that's because, for once, it's not someone pushing 30 who is immediately sophisticated and glamorous. I mean, this, you know, really looks like a fairly plain 19-year-old girl who, you know, has been kind of thrust into this situation of going and being a governess at this old dark house in the middle of nowhere. When it's Joan Fontaine, you know, she's way too pretty and she's way too sophisticated for me to buy into this, and she's also way too old. I bought this girl, Wasikowska girl, I mean, you know, and it may help that she's not really that identifiable either. I mean, the only things I've seen her in, you wouldn't recognize her again in this. You wouldn't recognize her from Alice in Wonderland in this. So, you know, it's fine. If you don't know the story, you should see it. I think you'll like it much better. If you do know the story, it's a good version of it. If you really like the story, you know, hey, have at it. It's just that I wasn't really transported by it.
In fact, he stayed right in his theater seat.
I did. Actually, no, I got up once I go to the bathroom.
You were transported to the
bathroom. I was transported to the bathroom by it, yes.
On golden wings. Floated from the theater.
Not quite.
Are you going to move on to Of Gods and Men?
Do I?
Yes, you do. Talk about this movie.
Oh, I want to talk about Of Gods and Men. Well, I probably should, because it was easily the best thing I saw. And, of course, it doesn't open until this Friday, unless,
is
of course...
Is it about Gods and Men?
Kind of. It has nothing to do with James Whale. That's Gods and Monsters. Well, I just wanted to make that clear in case people were confused about that. Now, this is a fact-based...
Is it about the Civil War?
No. That's Gods and Generals.
Okay. Of Gods and Generals and Monsters.
And Monsters. And men.
And mice.
That's right. And let's leave Steinbeck out of this, okay?
Okay.
All right.
Where were you?
What movie were we talking about?
Of Gods and Men.
Of Gods and Men, yes, okay. Is it easily the best thing I saw? It's a French film. It is fact-based. Don't let that scare you. It is not
particular.
It's easily
the best thing I saw, and I didn't even watch it.
There you go. Suspicions confirmed. Okay. Anyway, it is about a group of monks in Algeria during a time of a terrorist uprising. Some of them think they should leave. Some of them think they should stay. The soldiers would like to protect them. They don't want people with guns inside the monastery. The thing that works about this film is, well, there are several things that work about it, but one of the big things that works about it is that these guys aren't God salesmen. They're there to help the locals. You never see them try to convert anybody. You only ever see them try and find parallels in between their beliefs and Islam. They strictly are there to serve. They do not attempt to, hey, you want to hear about Jesus? No, there's none of that to it. And it really is refreshing. And the fact also is that they don't appear stupidly like, oh my goodness, let's martyrize ourselves. Because they actually consider leaving. Some of them want to leave. And the government wants them to leave. And that turns out not to be as easy as it might sound, because the people they're helping don't want them to leave. So there is there's definitely a push-pull thing going on there. It's an extraordinary film. You read the plot, monks in Algeria. It does not sound like something you're probably going to want to see. Don't cheat yourself, because it really is very, very good. Tyler Perry's Madea's Big Happy Family.
I want to point out that I was eating tacos last night out on a patio.
Yes.
In a public area. It's these business people sitting behind us. Three white people. One of them, this white woman, middle class business woman.
Yes.
Fourth person was this black guy, businessman. Somehow they started talking about Tyler Perry. The woman goes, oh, I thought that the new one's funny. Black guy goes, he set us back 65 years. So, I don't know what that means, but...
Oh, I know exactly what it means. I have mixed feelings about Tyler Perry.
On one hand, you love him.
No,
find
I
him
don't.
Hilarious.
No, I don't
you find
him hilarious.
You find him a brilliant filmmaker. You've seen all his movies.
Choke on your tongue. Choke on somebody else's tongue. I don't care. You know, yeah. I mean, it's another Tyler Perry movie. And if you don't know what that is, nothing I can say is going to make any difference to you. And if you do know what that is, you already know whether you're going to go see it or not. There's not a lot of reason to say a whole lot about it. As anyone who reads...
There are reasons to write hundreds of words.
Yes.
On the movie. And
this
then
is true. But
hundreds of more words on the rest of this movie.
Yes, but the thing about it is that this was kind of borne out by the fact that I did a Tyler Perry retrospective column.
Right.
Which has generated, a whole bunch of comments, almost none of which have anything whatever to do with Tyler Perry movies. Most of them appear to have been posted by people who have never seen a Tyler Perry movie. And it's just peculiar. Also, most of them do not read the entire column, I think. They read part of it to get an idea, okay, what Tyler Perry movies are like, okay, we'll move on. And then they go make a snarky comment. You know, and the movies deserve a lot of snarky comments. The bad thing about it is that Tyler Perry has made some better movies, and he made an almost good one with the last one, which was Four Colored Girls. And in fact, it had things in it that were very, very good. But he's retreated back into the Madea drag act, and it's not even a very good drag act. Let's face it, this is the most unconvincing 6.5-foot-tall black woman in a fat suit you've ever seen. And I don't personally, I don't know anyone who says, I know of no dialect in which people say heller instead of hello, or afternoon for afternoon. This is no dialect I have ever... Have you ever encountered anybody who said that?
I don't interact with people.
Oh, okay. Well, we know that's a lie, but you interact with more people than I do.
All in my head. You saw my brilliant African cat's paw.
Yeah, that's true. So, yeah, that probably is true. You can live within the confines of your own skull very comfortably indeed. Anyway, it's another Tyler Perry movie. It is worse than some, better than others. There is no reason for me to give the plot for this before anybody asks.
What's the
because
plot?
Because nobody cares.
I do.
No, you don't. Read it in the paper if you want to know what the plot is.
Can't read. Or else I wouldn't want to know what a Tyler Perry movie's about.
Get somebody to go read it to you.
I don't know anyone.
Your mama can read it to you. Speaking of which, let's hear about the movie your mother liked.
She liked Water for Elephants.
Yes.
Which I did, in fact, before I found that out, telling people that this was a movie that...
Their mother
would like.
Yeah.
I think that's about the most succinct way of placing this movie. It's that it's perfectly fine to an extent. There's nothing very memorable about it other than Robert Pattinson didn't annoy me. So that weird overbite thing is...
That's really...
Yeah. I can't get upset about... It's not Twilight. I mean...
Yeah, well, how many shots are there of him and Reese Witherspoon exchanging longing glances? Does he ever walk towards the camera in slow motion?
No.
Okay.
He gets beat up a few times.
I might enjoy that.
He gets bit by a lion.
What's this whole scene where Reese Witherspoon's holding this elephant's trunk? I mean, I want to know about this. I mean, strikes me as this woman is doomed to grotesque and horrible disappointment if she thinks this is in some way related to Robert Pattinson.
She probably doesn't because it's an elephant.
You never know.
Well, I would say that...
The Freudian in me kicks in when I see this, you know.
Well, you probably shouldn't have a Freudian in you.
That's probably true. But they're a lot more fun than the Jungians. Anyway, continue with this...
Sometimes a cigar is just a cigar.
Yeah, and sometimes it's not.
Anyway, it's basically Titanic, but shorter and with no boobs.
You mean to tell me the elephant sinks?
No, but a bunch of people die. Oh, you know, okay. A bunch of people are going to die.
I see.
You don't know who is going to die.
I bet I can guess.
Bet you can. But would you be correct?
So he plays a runaway or something?
Yeah, his parents, he's in veterinary school at Cornell, which I guess is a thing.
Okay, well, that sounds...
He's about to take his final so he can graduate and finds that his parents have died in a car accident. So he goes home, cries a little bit, and then instead of finishing his degree and, like, starting his own life, he runs off, hits the rails.
You have left out the fact that this is in the teeth of the Depression.
Yes.
Okay.
Would you recommend that other people's mothers see this? Would you
recommend that my mother? If your mother's like, I want to see a good movie, what seems sweet? And then you go, Water for Elephants. You'll probably cry or something, Mom. And you should. Not tears of sadness, but tears of joy.
You see, you're nicer than I am because my mother asked me what's a good movie. I send her to Super.
My mother loves me more, I guess, is what.
I've just been dealing with mine a lot longer than you have.
My mom doesn't forward me emails.
This is so funny. Yeah, okay.
Your mother might hear this, Ken.
My mother's not going to listen to us talk on...
If I forward it to her.
If you forward it to her, she might. Yes, you're right.
What is this week's Thursday Horror Picture Show? Actually, more importantly, where is it?
Where is it? Where is it? Where is that thing lost again?
No.
Oh, okay. It
That's
is.
That's not what I meant at all, Ken.
Ah, I see. Well, sometimes on Thursday morning, I'm spending a good deal of time going, where is it? And that's because
the... cold?
Yes, because it's cold.
I'm getting myself out laughing with this.
Yes, that's the reason.
Steve is easily entertained.
Yeah, he is. It really doesn't take a whole lot.
Where is this movie?
It's at the Carolina.
That's right.
Upstairs in the lounge.
That's right.
8 o'clock on Thursday.
That's right.
Like it is every week.
Yes. And what is the title this week, young Johnny?
Fearless Vampire Killers.
Very good. And you've seen it.
Horror.
You can.
Horror.
Horror comedy.
Horror.
Horror.
No, there's more to the title.
Okay. Or.
I forget. I was going to get you to do it.
Pardon me, but your teeth are in my throat.
Or is it neck? May actually use that.
It's neck. I think it's neck. I think it's neck, yeah. Pardon me, but your teeth are in my neck, yeah.
Where else would they be?
Well, they could be in that, you know, glass on the bedside table. There's another possibility. You have to consider that.
Sure. What about this movie, Ken?
What about it? Well, you've seen it.
Yes. It's made by that deviant Roman Polanski.
That degenerate Roman Polanski. It makes this sort of our Roman Polanski week, since we're running Chinatown
and
tonight.
And we're degenerates.
And we're definitely on the degenerate side. I mean, you know. These people are no mere film critics. These people are sick. So.
Ken didn't even like Atlas Shrugged.
Yeah, that kind of puts me in the majority of the human race, actually.
The wrong part. Not the elite.
What is this crazy movie about?
About vampires. It's about Professor Abrancius, played by Jack McGowran, and his faithful assistant, Alfred, played by an unbilled Roman Polanski, who actually is really the star of the movie, but he doesn't give himself any billing, traveling deep into the heart of Transylvania to help stamp out vampires. That pretty much is the plot. And it's funny, it's scary. Well, it's funny, it's spooky. I don't know if it's really scary. It's very atmospheric. It's a lot like a fairy tale. It has images from Nosferatu, and it has images from Carl Theodore Dreyer's Vampyr. I mean, it really is heavily influenced by Eastern European art and folklore and Hammer horror movies. It's the first chance I know of that you get to see a gay vampire.
So why should people come see this movie?
Because this is a terrific movie, although I'm not real sure how audiences are going to take to it, because it probably... it's slower and more stylized than people are looking for, especially coming off of last week showing Dead Alive.
It's kind of the opposite end of the horror comedy spectrum.
Yeah,
I can't think of another slapstick
in it.
Yeah, but
it addresses also the issue of what happens when you are dealing with vampires who aren't Christians, which had never been addressed before. It got the word necrophile past the censors.
To see Sharon Tate
taking a bath. We get to see Sharon Tate take two baths.
Yes.
And she's still alive at the time, too. You get Ferdy Mayne, who is a terrific vampire. He's Count von Krolok. And that makes him probably one of the few, possibly the only, vampire in the history of cinema with a glass eye. There's a terrific story about Ferdy Mayne and his glass eye. Somehow or other, and I don't even want to consider how this is possible, he swallowed it.
Breakmania.
Possibly. In any case, since it didn't immediately come out, they gave him one of those examinations where they run something up the back passage and look around. And whilst this was in progress, he asked the doctor, "Can you see anything?" And the doctor said, "No." And Ferdy Mayne is reported to have said, "That's funny, doctor, I can see you." And on that note, we'll move away from the Fearless Vampire Killer. Such a scene does not exist in the film. Do not claim that I said it did, and then come here and be disappointed.
Be disappointed for other reasons.
Thank you. You finished my sentence for me. You've been together too long.
let's talk about the Film Society.
Nah, less. Because it's an Edward G. Robinson picture.
Where's it at, Ken?
Where's it at?
Yes.
It's where it's happening. That's where it's at. Okay, it's happening in the Cinema Lounge at the Carolina on Tuesday. Tuesday, mark you. Tuesday at 8 p.m. And it's Edward G. Robinson in Mervyn LeRoy's Five-Star Final, which is Edward G. Robinson as a newspaper editor, not a gangster. He still talks like Edward G. Robinson. It also has Boris Karloff in it as a sexually degenerate divinity student who has become a drunken, lecherous reporter. It is an amusing portrayal, to say the least. It also has, it's the film debut of the magnificent Aline McMahon. And if you don't know who Aline McMahon is, stop by and I'll slap your wrist. And you probably don't know who Aline McMahon is, so I'll probably have to slap. Okay, there's one wrist offered. Okay, there's one. Two. You've seen Aline McMahon. You can't make this claim.
I want you to touch me.
Bitch.
How many stars did you give this movie?
Five, because it's a wonderful movie.
Okay. If you did 4.5, I was going to say.
No.
Didn't live up to its title.
That's right. It's the full... That's the thing I think is sort of funny about it, is that I really suspect that most people don't even know what a five-star final is anymore. I imagine the title is completely meaningless to them. Because nobody, for the most part, I can't really remember when newspapers were so important that they came out in multiple editions during the course of the day. Oh yeah, many papers still have a bulldog edition, which is a cut down version that comes out early in the evening for sending to, faraway places. It's, the example is because I used to deal with the Miami Herald. The Miami Herald that came up to Fort Pierce, which is 150 miles away for distribution that night, was considerably different from the one that would be delivered in Miami itself. It's, slimmed down and put together earlier so that it can get up there in time. But a five-star final was the last edition of the day of a newspaper. It was the most polished, the best, the most finished, and comprehensive paper that they would put out that day. And in this case, this is essentially an expose of tabloids. And it's based on a play that was written by a man whose name I forget, who actually worked on a New York tabloid in the 1920s. So there's probably a fair amount of actual material in there. I mean, this is a very pre-code film. Robinson has an advertising promotions man that works for him. I mean, 3 years later, you would not have been able for this guy to lay out a taxi cab race through New York and telling the person that he's got it fixed so that, and I quote, a Jew, a WOP, and an Irishman win. There are many sexual innuendos, especially involving Boris Karloff, whom this woman is advised not to ride in taxi cabs with, for reasons that become incredibly apparent. It's very enjoyable. It's very rough, because what it is, it does make a pretty strong indictment of this kind of tabloid fodder, where you have people dredging up a 20-year-old crime that someone was acquitted of and basically trying it in the press all over again, regardless of what it does to anybody who is involved. It really is it's still a topical movie in its own way, even though it's 80 years old. And it's a lot of fun on occasion, too, but the ending is by no means fun. The ending is really, really grim. And it's probably, even though the ending is a little stagey, I don't think it's lost any of its power. You can't excite him. Well,
anything can excite him. I think it's the possibility of the fifth Fast and Furious movie.
I don't get to watch that. I don't even get that quality.
Okay, I want you to go back and look at the review for the last Fast and Furious movie and go down into the comments where you said, and I quote, "I couldn't even make it through the trailer."
For that one.
Oh, right, like this one's going to be any different.
It is. More action, Ken.
So let's talk about the upcoming releases.
Yes, that's one of them.
What is?
Fast Five.
What is Fast Five?
It's another in the seemingly endless Fast and Furious movies. Only this one's even faster and more furiouser than all the others.
Five refers to Vin Diesel's chins, right? Am I mistaken?
I don't know.
Okay.
I do know that somehow or other this takes place before Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift.
Yeah, I remember seeing something about like one of the characters in this movie dies in the other one.
But like anybody cares or has been keeping track.
Well, somebody has because they had to make that up.
Well, I guess that's true. But you know, let's face it. This is big, bulky guys racing big, hulky, souped-up cars. And shit blows up real good. And that's about it, you know. Except this one has managed to drag in Dwayne, I am no longer The Rock Johnson, as a bad guy who is supposed to have a truly epic fight with Vin Diesel. Well, Paul Walker tries to...
I won't know.
I have said you could have it. If you want it that bad.
No, I'm not gonna.
I will going, oh, take he's what going you to have martyrize given me. Himself. No, what I asked you.
Is not how you put it.
I said I would prefer it if you would do these two.
Right.
Okay. That is not saying you have to take them.
What do you have to take?
Some Christian thing that I can't be mean about, and
you can be mean about it.
Kind of mean about it.
Which is called
The Fifth Quarter. Which isn't an actual thing.
I don't know. I mean, I know there are supposedly only four quarters to a football game, but...
Well, a quarter is a fourth.
But they...
How do you squeeze a fifth quarter? You can have overtime.
As far as I'm concerned, the entire football game is overtime.
Well.
But that's just me. I loathe football. That's another reason I don't want to do this.
Christians.
I don't loathe Christians. Don't be putting that around. That's only going to. I don't need the mail that's going to generate.
Who's your favorite Christian?
Norman Vincent Peale.
So let's move on to. Hoodwink 2.
T-O-O.
With an exclamation point, because it's that goddamn exciting.
Which looks dreadful.
The first one was dreadful. I see no reason this should be any different. Except they couldn't even manage to get Anne Hathaway. Anne Hathaway, who, you know, well, maybe she hadn't disgraced herself at the Oscars by this point in time when she said no to this. But Anne Hathaway wouldn't come back to do the voice of Red Riding Hood.
She has a career now.
She had a career then, too, but maybe not as much of a... The Princess thing, the Princess Diaries movies.
Something to hang your hat on.
Hey, they made a lot of money and they made her very popular.
Not popular enough to get a hoodwinked.
Somehow or other, the original one, which looks like it cost $1.50 to make, supposedly grossed $50 million, so we are saddled with another one.
Well, I'm
saddled. You're saddled with another one. Assuming you wish to take that, you know, yes.
Assuming.
Yes. Okay.
It's like this is a democracy.
Which then brings us to...
I don't know.
What? How could you... This is going to be the big hit of the week.
Prom.
Yes, well, prom.
A whole movie of underage sex and drinking.
That's right.
Right.
with people that are 20-something pretending to be 17. You know, it's going to be grim. I guarantee it.
It's a movie about
going to prom.
What is it about?
It's a group of intersecting stories. In other words, it's like Altman Light for high schoolers. Of people getting ready to go to the prom and going to the prom. And it's
getting pregnant.
Prom
2.
And it stars what Disney refers to as an emerging ensemble cast, meaning, in other words, you never heard of any of these people.
Where did they emerge from?
I don't know. Probably the Disney Channel. And then there is Dylan Dog, Dead of Night. Know anything about it?
No.
That's based on an Italian comic book. The Italian comic book was written by the same guy who wrote the novel on which Cemetery Man is based. So this has a possible interest factor. It doesn't look bad in the trailer. It is, however, being handled by Freestyle Releasing, who almost never gets a decent movie.
Yep.
And if they do, they bitch it up somehow in terms of promoting it. And this is probably one of those cases. I think the last time they had a hit film was 2006. The last thing they released was the Tea Party documentary, I Want Your Money, which even Tea Partiers wouldn't go to. Didn't it make like $34 the entire weekend it was here or something?
Something like that.
Yeah, it was really grim.
And the premise of Dylan Dog, do you know it?
He's a supernatural detective. He works for vampires and zombies. And
he's not a dog.
And he's not a dog. And he's played by Brandon Routh, the misbegotten Superman from Superman Returns, the casting couch cutie that Bryan Singer put in Superman Returns.
He redeemed himself in Scott Pilgrim.
So. That's true. Okay, so we'll give him that. So you know, I mean, frankly, with the lineup this week, it's the best looking thing out there if you take Gods and Men out of it. Which tells you a lot about this week. I've had enough.
Okay, good. Yeah. I'm Justin, he's Kim.
That's right.
Mount Express, City of Shanville.
Yeah.